Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Thanks, MOTAT. I just want to start off Dear Science by giving a big thanks to Marcus Jones, who was unable to come into the studio today, but still found the time to call in to keep the science rolling. Kananama spoke to Marcus today, so we'll just cut straight to the chase and begin with the first topic.
COVID research updates, Moderna vaccine vanquishes viral variants.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you probably heard already, there is at least two variants of COVID that have emerged over the last few weeks. And one seems to have emerged in the UK and another one in South Africa. And the question is whether the vaccines that have been under development and some have already been approved for use, whether they're actually going to work against these new COVID-19 variants. It's really important because these new variants seem to be more virulent than and spreading more quickly than regular COVID-19. So it's a really important question. And so there's been some early studies. So Moderna, which was one of the two companies that were the first to release a vaccine sort of late last year, they collected blood samples. They're trying to answer this question. So they've collected blood samples from 8 people and 24 macaque monkeys that have received 2 doses of the company's vaccine. And the vaccine instructs the body to make, I think I talked about this a while ago now, but this particular vaccine instructs the body to make the coronavirus's spike protein. And so it sort of primes the immune system to produce the neutralizing antibody. So it effectively instructs the immune system how to produce the antibodies that can prevent cells from being infected. All of the blood samples from the vaccinated people and the monkeys contained the neutralizing antibodies against the virus. Effectively potentially good news. And the researchers exposed the blood to viral particles that mimic a range of coronavirus variants, including the two variants, one in the UK and one from South Africa. And the samples' neutralizing antibodies were as effective against the variant first found in the UK as effective as the original form of the virus. But they were only about 1/5 to 1/10 as effective at neutralizing the South African variant. But even so, they're saying the antibodies were effective enough to provide protection against both variants. To try and improve, Moderna is planning to test a booster to enhance the immunity to the emerging variants. But those findings have not yet been peer-reviewed. So it's a mix. I think it's maybe a slightly mixed message. The UK variant, it seemed like it's the vaccine, or at least the Moderna vaccine, is just as effective. The South African variant, maybe less so, but it may be good enough. But even so, they're trying to improve it.
So because the coronavirus vaccines already require 2 doses, don't they?
Yes, they required 2 doses. But it's whether those doses are going to work as well against the new variants. That was the question they're trying to address. It's maybe a cautious yes so far.
It's going to be interesting to see how this develops. So on to the next story, lab-made antibodies can prevent HIV infection, but only if they match the virus.
Yeah, so we can't forget that there's many other global health issues affecting the world. Obviously, coronavirus has stormed into our attentions over the last 12 months or something like that. But HIV obviously has been around an awful lot longer, and it is still a source of active research, and we certainly haven't found a cure. Although people are obviously living with HIV for a very long time, effectively, the prognosis is much better now than it was 20, 30 years ago. But we don't have a vaccine. I mean, HIV is a virus. We don't have a vaccine in the same way that we're developing a vaccine for coronavirus. We don't have a vaccine for HIV. And so it obviously people have explored many ways to help people with HIV and AIDS. And one, over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, there's been some research on whether giving people infusions of antibodies made in a lab can protect them from the AIDS virus. So this is like a protective infusion of antibodies. And the sort of the slightly unsatisfying answer is sort of sometimes. So the results of these studies were that people who were given infusions of these antibodies, these are called monoclonal antibodies, because they're made by cloning a unique white blood cell. People who were given these antibodies had a lower risk of becoming infected with HIV, but only if they were exposed to strains of the virus that were specifically susceptible to the antibody. In other words, it's like a sort of a narrow spectrum antibiotic. So, people say antibiotics to help with bacterial infections, and there's broad spectrum and narrow spectrum antibiotics. It's like taking a narrow spectrum antibiotic. You have this infusion of antibodies, and they protect you against a specific strain of HIV. That seems to work, but there are apparently many, many strains of HIV. And so the researchers say that the strategy, they thought it could provide sort of a passive immunity in contrast to the active immunity that's triggered by vaccines. And of course, there isn't vaccines for the AIDS virus. It's likely to be more successful with some more recently developed monoclonal antibodies that work against a broader strain, a sort of swath of HIV strains. But the good news, so this sort of adds to the arsenal that we have. There are various ways that we can treat HIV, and these are one particular strain, and there are different strategies, some of which require people to come in regularly and take medications, but these monoclonal antibodies are one sort of preventative treatment that people can have. So if you're in an at-risk category, you can have these take these antibodies as a treatment, and if they are particularly active against the strain that you may become infected with, then they can be effective. A lot of scientists are quite excited about this because this was ultimately this could become one of a cocktail of antibodies that people could take that could prevent or protect them against multiple strains of HIV, and they would only need to do this once if they're in a high risk category, and hopefully then they would be much more able to fight off the virus.
So we could be looking at a new alternative in the future than, say, as compared to something like PrEP. So instead of taking pills like daily, so you could go for one dose of this cocktail.
Yes, and people who are taking these pills, the PrEP treatments that you talk about, there's a lot more people who sort of drop it, or they're not taking it regularly enough. But in the trials of these antibodies, these sort of antivirals, the uptake was much higher, and many more people, because it's effectively an easier way to treat it, and it's preventative, and so they think this may be a better way of conferring some sort of effective immunity against HIV.
And so our final story today, substance found in Antarctic ice may solve a Martian mystery.
Yeah, that's right. So so the scientists working in Antarctic taking deep ice cores. So they drill down into the Antarctic ice and pull out these long, thin cores. and basically look at what's in the ice, what minerals are there. And they've discovered a common mineral, or at least it's common on Mars, deep within an ice core in Antarctica. So this mineral is sort of a brittle yellow-brown substance known as jarosite. The research finds that, or they think it was forged in the same way both on Earth and Mars, and that's it was actually formed from dust trapped within the ancient ice deposit. So when the NASA Opportunity rover was scooting about Mars about 15 years ago, in 2004 actually, it was first spotted on Mars. And the rover rolled over these fine-grained layers of this particular mineral. And at the time, the discovery made headlines because this material, jarosite, needs water to form, along with a few other things like iron and sulfate and potassium, and also needs acidic conditions. And on Mars, those requirements aren't easily satisfied. And so it was a sort of difficult question to answer is how this material or this mineral could have become so abundant on Mars. And some people thought it may have been left behind by the evaporation of sort of small amounts of salty, acidic water. But that didn't make sense because the alkaline sort of the rocks in Mars's crust are alkaline, and they would have neutralized the acidic moisture. And so another idea was that jarosite was born sort of within massive ice deposits that could have blanketed Mars billions of years ago. And as ice sheets grew over time, the dust would have accumulated within the ice and may have been transformed into this mineral, into this jarosite mineral, within sort of like slushy pockets between the ice crystals. But this process has never been observed anywhere in the solar system. Now on Earth, we find jarosite in piles of mining waste that have been exposed to air and rain, but it's not very common. And no one really expected to find it in Antarctica. And certainly the scientists that were there weren't really hunting for it. They were searching for minerals that might indicate different ice age cycles within these cores. In the deepest ice, in the core's deepest ice, or the core's the ice that was furthest down, the scientists came across these little tiny little dust particles that they thought could be this material, this mineral. And so they did some experiments. They looked at how it absorbed X-rays, and they looked at it under electron microscopes, and they confirmed that it was indeed this material, this jarosite material. And it was also noticeably that these little particles were noticeably cracked, and they didn't have any sharp edges. They were sort of rounded, which is a sign that they'd formed and eroded in these pockets within the ice. And so this suggests now that this mineral jarosite forms the same way on Mars. So they found this mechanism for forming this now on Earth, and that's the only thing that they can think of to describe how it would have formed on Mars. So then they have two places. They've observed it on Earth, and they obviously they've observed the mineral on Mars, but they hadn't. This is sort of a good evidence that it probably formed in the same way.
These are huge. These are huge deposits on Mars, right? Like they're not just like small amounts.
Right. Yeah. And it's not just a thin film. It's really quite a lot. These are meters thick deposits. And I think it's. The scientists sort of explain this because you know Antarctica isn't really very dusty. There isn't much particulate matter that comes over through the air from northern continents. But Mars is very dusty. Everything is covered in dust, and so you know it can just build up and build up and form these massive deposits. So it's an interesting. Little study to show that yes, Mars was covered in these big ice sheets. This mineral, in particular, weren't just carving out valleys like they do on Earth, but they were actually contributing to Mars's chemical makeup, actually producing minerals that are now found on the planet. And so this is, so this is nice evidence that this mineral was formed inside big glaciers rather than, because we've seen it now on Earth rather than in any other way.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.